So, I'm going to be reading this article here. Operation Crimson Mist, electronic slaughter in Rwanda. Spooks now use technology in Baghdad that was proven on 1 million dead Africans in Rwanda. Now, keep this in mind. This is something that we are now finding out about, but there may be more stories like this, and I suspect in history there are. By Joe Vials. Original title, American Mind Control in Baghdad. Operation Crimson Mist. During the late afternoon of 6th of April 1994, a hail of cannon shells tore through the fuselage of a commercial airliner flying overhead central Rwanda. Several seconds later, the blazing plane exploded on impact with the ground, killing President Habyarimana of Rwanda, President Ntaryamira of Burundi, and most of their senior government officials. In that fatal millisecond of time, the entire political command structure of Central Africa was decapitated, leaving the way open for Operation Crimson Mist, the most obscene terminal mind control experiment ever mounted by the United States of America against a sovereign nation. The Crimson Mist has been used again recently on a smaller scale in Iraq, is now beyond doubt. That Crimson Mist has been used again recently on a smaller scale in Iraq is now beyond doubt. As Habyarimana and his colleagues made their death dive, a small group of American men and women lounged around in a large hut at the edge of a discreet gravel airstrip a few miles from the Rwandan capital, Kigali, temporary home for their three unmarked C-130 Hercules transport planes. All crew members carried forged credentials showing them as atmospheric researchers employed by the authentic civilian American agency, but these were only for emergency identification if one of the aircraft was forced to make an unscheduled landing on unfriendly territory. For all practical security purposes, neither they nor their three large aircraft were even in Africa. When news of the presidential crash came in over the VHF radio, one of the Hercules planes was swiftly prepared for takeoff. The flight engineer checked the attachment of the radio rocket-assisted takeoff packs while the scientists made final adjustments to a large microwave dish mounted on the rear loaded ramp of the aircraft. It was a strange and esoteric piece of equipment alone that would directly contribute to the deaths of more than 1 million Africans during the 100 days that followed. Though completely silent in operation, the single microwave dish had more killing potential than a whole squadron of AC-130 Spectre gunships armed with 50 Gatling cannons. Willing to commit mass murder. Though officially tagged an experiment, none of those present had any doubt that this was merely a cosmetic cover for the gruesome operational work ahead. Each member had been carefully vetted and then vetted again by US intelligence to ensure that they had the right stuff and were philosophically committed to two objectives. First was the evolving need to control or eliminate political dissent by remote means in the run-up to the 21st century, and second was the need to stem or reverse massive population increases across the world, which threatened to overwhelm existing natural resources, especially water and food. Intrinsically, this required a willingness to commit mass murder, and everyone present had passed this critical test with flying colors. As the Hercules engines started with a roar, American agents in Kigali were working alongside local civil servants and members of the Rwandan Security Service, ramping up public suspicion about foul play in the presidential air crash. Urged on by corrupt officialdom, Hutu tribesmen started marching on Tutsi tribesmen and threw a few rocks at them. Innocent enough at the onset, although with a few nasty machete cuts here and there. But then the C-130 Hercules made a carefully calculated pass directly over the advancing Hutu, and they suddenly went berserk. Eyes glazed, the mood of the Hutu crowd went from simple anger to uncontrolled rage, and within minutes, hundreds of assorted Tutsi body parts were flying through the air, creating electronic rage. What the Hercules crew had just achieved has been an open secret since the late 50s, when researchers accidentally discovered that there is a precise control brainwave for literally everything we do, and for everything we feel. The problem back then was that each of these control brain waves, rage, fear, panic, lethargy, vomiting, and so on, had to be transmitted with an accuracy taken out of 3 decimal places, or they simply did not work at all. But as the years rolled by, and with the advent of transistors and microprocessors, the operational application of precise control brain waves became practical reality. It is important to note here that the lethal trick repeated hundreds of times by the C-130 Hercules in Rwanda during April through July 1994 were not classic mind control in the ultimate conspiratorial meaning of them, i.e. where people claim to hear complicated messages inside their heads, or where it is feared that the NSA or similar intend to turn everyone into helpless zombies by implanting electronic chips in their arms or necks. What the C-130 crew were actually engaged in was electromagnetically augmenting a pre-existing state. Remember that the agents and security service personnel first had to point the Hutu tribesmen in the direction of the Tutsi, induce reasonable anger, and make sure they were appropriately armed. Only then could the C-130 go to work with the precise control brainwave of rage augmenting and thus upgrading crowd behavior from that of angry demonstrators to uncontrollable genocidal maniacs. Although not classic, this was and is unquestionably mind control, for the simple reason that external means were being used to force an irresistible change in behavior. For those who really want to know how governments or agencies change public behavior on a whim, the explanation is not too complicated, though obtaining details of the classified control brain frequencies is all but impossible. Various academics have actually demonstrated some of these effects quasi-publicly over the years, which provides hard reality for skeptics. One of the leading lights in this field is Dr. Elizabeth Rauscherbeis, who was a nuclear scientist and researcher at Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory and at Stanford Research Institute, professor of physics at John F. Kennedy University of California, research consultant to NASA and the U.S. Navy, and a member of IEEE, APS, AAAS, MAAANA, AAMI. Elizabeth Rauscherbeis identified specific frequency effects to induce nausea, happiness, and many other behavioral states decades ago. Clearly, Dr. Rauscherbeis is an enthusiast. Give me the money and 3 mouths, she boasts, and I'll be able to affect the behavior of 80% of the people in this town without their knowing it. Make them happy, or at least think they're happy. Or aggressive. Unlike many researchers in this field, Elizabeth Rauscherbeis tends to be open about her work, has demonstrated the effects many times in quasi-public forums, and claims to experiment only on fully informed people. Many years ago, during one memorable demonstration in California, she turned a specific brainwave on all students on the left side of her auditorium, whereupon their teeth started chattering collectively and uncontrollably. When the unaffected students on the right side of the auditorium suggested this might be some sort of trick, Elizabeth Rauscherbeis calmly turned the specific brainwave on them instead. The right side now suffered exactly the same fate, watched by the stunned but no longer affected students on the left side. Extra low frequencies. Wow. The main problem lies in the delivery of these brainwaves to the target, because they all lie in the extremely low spectrum between 0.1 and 25 hertz cycles, which with all control brainwaves in an even narrower central band between 0.6 and 10.2 hertz. These are effectively the same as Earth frequencies, meaning that they are very hard to direct via conventional radio transmission. Remember that in order to narrow a central band between 0.6 and 10.2 hertz. Remember that in order to be effective in selective crowd behavior augmentation, you must be able to restrict delivery to clearly defined crowds in clearly defined areas. This is achieved by using an extremely high-frequency microwave beam, which is then amplitude modulated at exactly the same rate as the desired control brainwave. Now, this is important with 5G, guys. Little insertion here from yours truly. Going back in. This is much easier to explain with pictures, so take a good look at the diagram below. Delivery of control brainwaves by modulating microwave beam. Required control brainwave or brainwave set. Continuous microwave carrier transmissions. delivery of control brainwaves to selected targets. Oh my God, wow. Microwaves in the 1 to 3 gigahertz range travel in perfectly straight lines like light to make them easy to control in terms of direction, regardless of power input. In most cases, microwaves are transmitted by a dish aerial of the sort you frequently see located low down on all television transmitter mast. These are designed to transfer high volume electronic data between the television and studio and transmitter and vice versa. Where the American mind controller score with the airborne and truck-mounted equipment is by using microwave aerials that can be adjusted in exactly the same way as you would adjust the focus on a varial beam flashlight. How this is done is shown in the second diagram to the right. In Rwandan Hutu tribesmen example shown near the start of this report, the crew of the C-130 Hercules only needed to know the width of the target crowd on the ground and the width of their own microwave beam at any given true altitude in feet, as read directly from the radar altimeter. With those two valuables available, it is then a simple matter to adjust beam width to accurately bracket the target crowd from any altitude chosen. Baghdad looting. But this equipment is not just deployed in large lumbering Hercules transport planes. During recent weeks, European security experts have concluded that smaller versions of Crimson Mist were recently deployed on the streets of Baghdad, designed in part to augment the media propaganda line that Iraqi citizens are dangerous savages, all badly in need of direct supervision by democratic American authorities. One classic example of this was the looting of the Baghdad Museum, apparently by a crowd of undisciplined rabble, but video footage tells a very different story. To pull off this stunt, the American authorities need to assemble a crowd, managed quite easily with a promise of free food. Then they need to place the crowd outside the museum, which again was easy because they located the free food outside the museum itself. Next up, the attention of the crowd had to be drawn to the museum itself, which was achieved in spectacular fashion by firing 2 100-millimeter shells from an Abrams tank gun straight through the main doors. Fine so far, but how to get them inside? The video shows two soldiers gesticulating to the crowd, urging them to go in and help themselves, thereby clearly identifying the target Rwanda style. Then it starts to get really interesting. The two soldiers rapidly withdraw, leaving the Iraqis standing leaderless outside the open doors, and then click, just like flicking a light switch, the entire crowd goes nuts absolutely simultaneously, which never happens in real life. In the real world, there's always a leader visibly stirring up the crowd and preparing them for action, but not outside the Baghdad Museum. One second, these folks are dull, hungry Iraqis. Next second, there are instant, uncontrolled maniacs streaming in through the museum doors. It is also suspected that the same equipment was used to augment the looting attacks on various hospitals around central Baghdad, though this claim seems to be based as much on logic as it is on video footage. These so-called looters are Iraqi citizens who received essentially free health care in the hospitals under Saddam Hussein. Not only that, but their wives and children are being bombed and shot by Americans, meaning that their free hospitals are absolutely essential to them, and thus the very places they would normally defend in the first place. Bearing this logic in mind, it seems likely that the European security experts are also correct in this claim. Homeland security. While there is unlikely to be very much concern in America, Britain, and Australia for the plight of Iraqis on the streets of Baghdad, it may be time to examine what is likely to happen in our own democratic countries if things get more out of control than they are at present. Remember that the 2.2 million strong demonstration in London just before the illegal invasion of Iraq had little, if anything, to do with English folk like Saddam Hussein. Iraq was merely an excuse for this unprecedented mass of human beings to migrate to London, wave banners that mostly read, "Not in our name," at corrupt politicians. The bottom line is that the next time 2.2 million British citizens descend on the capital and have to go to the politicians, their real targets, they might be carrying something far more dangerous than banners. Every policeman and military man knows very well that a 2.2 million strong mass with hostile intent simply cannot be stopped by standard riot control techniques, and they cannot be stopped by bullets fired by soldiers on the streets. Even if British soldiers could be persuaded to open fire on their own neighbors, most unlikely, The entire army would be powerless to act, so what then? Across the Atlantic in America and in Australia, things are really no better. As I write, the American dollar is headed straight to four basement levels, which in turns will lead to a depression and increased anger on the part of the Americans, aimed largely at corrupt politicians on Capitol Hill. Naturally, the politicians will try to put the people down as usual. But what if this time it is a step too far? What if a few hundred or a few thousand of the 260 million private weapons in American hands are brought into play? What then? The chances are that in all affected Western countries, politicians and their real masters will try to invoke the use of highly unconventional weapons in order to try and save their own worthless hides. How successful they might be when that day comes, as it surely will, is largely up to you. Joe Viles.